We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's show. I'm host Leah Mattinson. First of all, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in from wherever it is that you are on this beautiful planet today. I appreciate everyone wanting to learn more insight, intelligence, and inspiration to live a better life. You know, the podcast has been on for 7 years now, and it's amazing the growing audience and people who really want to take back and master their life in all areas, whether that's their health, their wealth, their wellness, or their family's wellness. And it's, you know, I don't do a lot of politics on the show because we talk primarily about health and well-being, but the current state of the nation since 2020, for those of you who've been listeners of the podcast, you know, we've had human rights activists on, Sasha Stone, Dr. David Martin, Edward Dowd, Dr. Mackus, more recently, Dr. LaGuardia, people who are really speaking out about all kinds of things that are going on with humanity that have just never, ever been seen before. And so it's my great pleasure to invite to the audience today and share with you Bob Blalone. Bob is an Alberta boy, an Alberta girl. And so Bob is here to share with us his thoughts and experience in working and living in this province. And then I think that because it's a global audience, you guys are going to get that a lot of these themes are not just playing out in Alberta, Canada, but really are worldwide. And that Alberta is kind of this microcosm of Canada, of the biggest horror show that is going on in the world right now. So Bob is going to talk about, from his perspective, what's happening in Alberta, what he hopes to change and achieve by his influence within the political arena. So Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leah. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, Bob, for those of you who are not from Alberta, Bob's been blazing a trail through the Alberta landscape for the last few years, and especially in the last years or so, just really trying to figure out what it is that Albertans need to have a thriving life here. And so Bob's background is that he's a father of two. He's been married to 33 years now to his beautiful wife, Dana. Both come from farming and oil and gas. Both are of Christian faith. From 1993 to 2015, they supplied drill bits and equipment to the Northern Alberta drilling rig fleet. He's a proud Métis with ancestral ties to his great-grandfather, Chief Black Powder, and great-uncle, Chief Big Bear. They were the last holdouts of Treaty 6. Bob opposes the heavy hands of government. People before party politics, independent MLAs will have no party whip and no allegiance to a party. So Bob's here to talk about MLAs and bureaucrats that have not been hearing the people and how they must be held accountable by their constituents. So he is currently, what would you say, what's the proper term to use, Bob, for your quest right now? Because May 1st is kind of when you can become an independent candidate. But in this little time, the stretch between now and then, what's your official...
Well, I have to say it this way. It's my intention to become an independent candidate in the Camrose constituency.
Right. And the Camrose constituency is from Camrose to the Battle River corridor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty large constituency and lots of small towns. It's been amazing. I'm going to start rambling if you let me go.
Go for it, Bob.
I you said it at the beginning here, Leah. It's the health and well-being of everyone, of the people. And my vision was never limited to Alberta at all. I believe in solutions. I believe that the people, we need our voice back because it's been silenced for far too long. I see too many people being hurt and abused by all government agencies, in fact. And like many people in Alberta and Canada and all over the world, we're surviving. We are raising our families or running our businesses or working as employees. And we have moments where we can enjoy, you know, some time off here and there. But for the most part, we're just surviving. And I come from, you know, very humble beginnings. I say it that way, but I grew up poor. And I'm at the time it was hard, Leah. And I know a lot of people have grown up that way. It was hard in the time, but in hindsight, I'm so thankful that I grew up that way, and it taught me so much. You know, first and foremost, have empathy for others. And although my wife Dan and I have been truly blessed by the opportunities that were bestowed on us, and that I'm thankful to God for, that this province once had a bountiful opportunity for many people that were able to lift themselves up. I saw there's a lot of people struggling, and they were struggling before to make ends meet. And, you know, whether it's single moms or even parents that both have to work, and so therefore their children are being raised by the government, and this is the problem. And in being as busy as we were, we trusted people to be our guides and stewards in politics and bureaucracy. But, you know, I Dana and I, we sold our business in at the end of 2014, and there's 10 different reasons, but predominantly, I saw another downturn coming, and we had learned a valuable lesson. And we were doing it for a couple decades early on to save, you know, to have money saved. And I was very proud, and so was Dane. And we didn't have to lay off anybody during those downturns. We just planned for it and then tightened our belts and, you know, made adjustments, and whether it was parking trucks when we needed to. And so that was the first time I had time to get involved in really anything, because when I was first started our business, I was putting on 250,000 kilometers a year, and I love to drive, and I love talking to people and meeting people. And so that kind of went hand in hand with where I'm at now. But so I made the decision to volunteer in politics for the first time ever. I volunteered in the PC party when Kenny was just on his way to Alberta. I did take the time to read through what he had been saying in the House of Commons. I read a lot of what he had said, but in hindsight now, that wasn't his words, and he didn't mean it, what he said. And so, you know, when I was really involved in UCP, and I say it that way, but I, you know, I had meetings. I was right at the center and I'm of that inner circle, I guess I'll say. And so I had the opportunity to have meetings with Kenny, with his chief of staff, with many of the top political strategists, mostly all of them. And they conned me, and they conned all Albertans. These individuals are, you know, they're indoctrinated. They are recruited at a young age. Nick Kulsbergen, for example, he was recruited at the age of 16. He's a brilliant man, Nick is, and he's good at what he does. He's the top strategist for the Conservative Party of Canada.
Period. So where was he recruited from, Bob?
I believe he's from Ontario. And then the chief of staff, I'm going to cut to the chase here with how sinister the times are right now. And I didn't know this in my conversations with both of these individuals. So Jamie Huckabee is the former chief of staff to Jason Kenney. So the reason I had inside access was because my MLA, Dan Williams, was a six-year staffer when Kenny was in Ottawa as an MP. So the first time I had met Dan was when Kenny flew into Peace River, and I picked them up at the airport, and we spent some time together. And I was there, you know, just driving around to events and whatnot. And so I had a long period of time to talk to Kenny, and I had given him, when I was going around talking to people, speaking with people, listening to people, I had a list of 20 comments, questions, criticisms of Kenny and the governance and whatnot. And so we had spoken for a time, and then I gave him that list of points, and it was just some point form. And he is also very intelligent, and he's a very, how do I say this, the best the best politician in the worst sense of the word. He's a master of psychology, and that's what I recognize through this, that psychology is very important for these individuals that wish to control other people. And in a short amount of time, I gave him the list, and he said, can you expand on these two points? And one of them was the concept of free vote of our MLAs. And he said, by the way, this is yours. I know it is. And I said, it is mine. Right. And what I said to him was, and he said, you know, he's to the point. And he said, you know, I'm going to get pretty animated when I start talking about this. And he said, F and go for it. And so I did. And I criticized Harper in that conversation. I criticized all of them. I said, I'm not a fool. And many of us are watching closely now that we're sick and tired of this inner circle of power having control over these political organizations. And Harper was no different. You rule with an iron fist, and our elected representatives are around the perimeter, and they're literally whipped to abide by the party rule. And I said, we're sick of it, and especially in Alberta here, and you better, you know, do things differently. And he assured me, oh, yeah, they're going to do this and that. That policy became policy, free vote, and it read, and I don't even know if it's a policy anymore, but it was a policy through COVID, and it reads, the beginning specifically on matters of moral conscience. But being naive in politics, it wasn't Kenny's decision. It wasn't his chief of staff's decision. It was a membership vote. But they gutted it, as they do. And that's another thing I learned. When they write policies or bylaws for these organizations, very top down, and there's loopholes where they can maintain their power structure. And so that free vote was only to be enacted by the premier. So, that's one of the fallbacks that I went to, and then soon understood that it was irrelevant in this. Anyways, I'm going to pause there. Do you have any questions?
Sure. Well, I just think it's like you would have just jumped in, you know, going kind of an innocent lamb to the slaughter because you really didn't know anything about politics, and you're thinking, oh, hey, here's a good bunch of chums. I'm going to be able to hang out, find out what to do, and maybe pitch in here, you know, do my value add for the province. And then you find out that, no, that's a bunch of shenanigans, and that people aren't really honoring anything. So that it's like a very stark contrast to the world of business, where your word is actually whether or not you get contracts. Exactly. But this whole thing is completely different, right? So it's like you're out of a fish out of water. So you went from the UCP to then, and then what did you do? Because what was the critical point where you left? Because this is important to understand the history of all of the parties, because I think people think that there's three separate parties, and they're not separate parties. They're all three bodies, one head. And you really kind of got to see exactly that, you know, in real time, because I think when people only watch on the TV, they only get sort of a smattering of what's going on. And it's also, you know, a big show. And then they go to vote also, you know, kind of this, a big show, and sometimes not honest, you know, by the whole federal election stuff that was going on. So let's go back to your story about what you were learning along the way and sort of those critical things where you went, wow, it's like this whole thing is not controlled by any of the people. And it's really not at all.
No, I'll just finish that. One of the other individuals I met was the chief of staff. And that's an important, I talk about Jamie quite often because I didn't understand where he came from. In my time with the UCP, I really started waking up when I started to understand, like Kenny was being interviewed, I think it was a month after, and he was asked a question, because my passion to get involved was opportunity for oil in Alberta here. Northern Alberta is, the First Nations are waiting for their opportunities, and these projects were being systematically rejected. And Eagle Spirit Pipeline Energy Corridor was one. I'll just touch on that quickly. It was a 50-50 privately funded partnership with the 24 nations that were along its route all the way from Fort McMurray to Port Simpson, Lac Swan, which is just north of Prince Rupert. And amazing project. A friend of mine was a chief in the north, and he was involved in that. Kelvin Halin was the president of that organization. He's a lawyer now out of Vancouver, and he's from Port Simpson originally. And at the time, my friend was meeting with Gerald Butts and Trudeau, Justin Trudeau, And that's when the Northern Tanker Ban was implemented with this fictitious Great Bear Rainforest that was put on the map. And they did not consult with many of the nations in the north. And so that project died, and that project and Keystone and Energy East, when they all fell, so too did Carmen Creek Project by Peace River, which at the time, 85 members of the Woodland Cree First Nation were working full-time and 200 more seasonal. So it was, they're finally getting a taste of their own individual prosperity and independence and dignity and, you know, ownership. And that's what needs to happen across every community, not just Native Indians, but everyone. I was blaming, like everyone else, I was blaming Trudeau and Notley for shutting down these projects. But in fact, I learned with Mr. Huckabee, where he came from, on Halloween night 2020, I was actually reading the second letter from Archbishop Yeganeau to President Trump. And I was talking about the Great Reset. I didn't know about any of this global stuff. I didn't know about the originally was called the Green New Deal. And then I heard about the Green New Deal. Then it was a Great Reset. And then now it's called Just Transition. Harper was speaking at the Davos summits for years and years, that he's actually going to the Bilderberg meetings with Kenny. And now I understand the structure of these global power-hungry elites. Well, Jamie came from, I was reading that letter, and this has been an absolute spiritual journey for me too, Leah. I've always, I went through my period in my youth of trying to be an atheist, but that didn't last long. And but through this last 3 years, I've began reading the Bible now, and it's really helped me.
Nothing new under the sun, hey, Bob?
Exactly, yeah, so... But it was, you know what, it sounds, you know, and I'll say it this way, I don't like to, I'm going to say it, I've said it many times. There was three times during that summer where I'd be talking about the Great Reset or the Green New Deal, and Jamie's name would come to my mind. Mm-hmm. And two times, and the third time it happened was on Halloween night of 2020 when I was halfway through that letter. And boom, like it was just very clear. And so somebody's talking to me, right? And I did my research. Well, I found out that evening, Mr. Huckabee came from a global lobby organization. I'll just pause right here for a second. So Brian Peckford, the last living architect of the Charter Rights and Freedoms, I communicated with him via email, met him in person last summer, got into a couple conversations with him. And he acknowledged this all as truth also, which was really, really good to hear. And he said it in a speech last summer, the lobbyists are controlling our politicians. So Mr. Huckabee was with Gerson Larman Group out of New York City from 2010 to 2015. He was the vice president. And the day he left that organization, my MLA told me that he paused, this is his quote, paused his very lucrative private sector career to come back to Alberta to help. And so that's why I took it that Jamie was a good guy. And I'm like, you know, what a good guy doing this. And on the board of directors of that organization, the former campaign manager of Barack Obama, the former campaign manager of Hillary Clinton, the Democrat National Committee chairman, former, and Joseph Stiglitz, which is really concerning. Everyone should be concerned about that name. Joseph Stiglitz was the former top senior advisor to President Bill Clinton. He was with the IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change. He was the architect of carbon taxes. He was with the World Economic Forum since 1995. He was a chair of the World Bank. And so really, really at the table of the globalist. And that's who Mr. Huckabee was with. And, you know, when COVID, so I started pushing back before COVID began. I'll give you one example behind the scenes. And that was a lesson for me that I'll never do again. And people get upset at me, and I'll tell you where I've been politically since then. Some people get upset at me because I'm so transparent. But I really believe that that is what, and I hear it all the time, transparency is badly needed today, that people deserve, we the people deserve to hear what's happening behind the scenes of all these organizations. If you're going to sell memberships to people, well, they darn well deserve to know what's going on in that organization and who's making the decisions and what kind of conversations are going on. That's important.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I was reading the paper one morning, and we had the energy war room going. Remember that? It was supposed to be it was a $32 million budget to advocate for Alberta oil. And they appointed the head to that the campaign manager of Doug Schweitzer, who became the Minister of Justice at that time. And I was angry because he had no business having that role. Right. It was
What do you know about?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. $280,000. So I called two MLAs, Todd Lowen and Dan Williams, and I was upset. And then within 2 weeks, a $950,000 check gets sent over this law firm. Pardon me. And the law firm was where Doug Schweitzer came from and where this individual, Steve Allen, came from. And his son was still working at the law firm. So I demanded a meeting with Mr. Schweitzer, and I challenged him on it. I said, listen to me. And I always made sure I had two other people at these conversations. Right. I said, listen to me. I didn't work this hard for you guys, volunteering my full time and energy, so you guys could start stealing again. Yeah. And he literally hung his head like a child caught with his hand in the cookie jar. So that was, that was the beginning. And then when COVID began, like a lot of people, very quickly, I realized, hey, this isn't adding up here. Something's not right. Uh-huh. I started following John Ioannidis. I that's what I do when I wanted to learn about climate change. I reached out to Mike Hulme, Hulme. And I had many, many email discussions with Mike, and he let me learn on my own. Mike was with, I'll do a quick sidebar here, but Mike was with the International Panel of Climate Change for quite some time. And Mike believes in solutions on looking after our lands and our waters and our, being good stewards, but he didn't believe in carbon taxes. So he bounced away from that. And I'm going to say right now, boldly, climate change is a fraud, that carbon taxes are hurting people. And we should never have ever upset our energy basket here in Alberta by shutting down coal because it was cheap energy and people are feeling the pain now. And Germany was an example of what not to do. I studied that very closely. And this is something anybody can do. All this information is public. Anyway, so
there's other countries, Bob, that are using coal.
Yeah.
So the coal is like this horrible, horrible thing. It's being burned in other countries. It's being used in other countries. So we're impoverishing our own citizens by this kind of foolish. I shouldn't say foolish. People need to do their own research also. But I've been awake to the whole climate thing for quite some time. My dad was a farmer, and he said he figured he couldn't continue to be a good steward of the land when he got out of farming because of all of the pressure that was coming down from on high about what you needed to use and how you needed to farm. And he was just like, we can't sustain a good operational farm with all of this, the dictates, and that was 11 years ago. So, so I think like forest for the trees, you see that like, and who's prospering here. So let's talk about who is actually on that. Like who has this energy agenda here? Cause I think a lot of people think that the UCPs or Daniel Smith doesn't have this on her radar, that she's all about, protecting Alberta and I'm going to protect the resources in Alberta and I'm going to make sure all the people are healthy in Alberta. I'm going to take care of health in Alberta. So
with that conversation.
What were the things in the background that you saw? You did your research and went, no, this carbon footprint is carbon taxing business is not a good idea. They're also trying this in other countries. So in Oxfordshire, England, they've got all kinds of things going on in order to start really be tracking the people's carbon footprint and limiting what they do.
Control.
Yeah, control. It sounds control. Dystopian, yeah. But
So it was COVID. I mean, COVID, that was just a warm up. And I'm just going to, when I wanted to learn about COVID, that's when I started following John Ioannidis. Mm-hmm. And he's the 87th most cited scientist of all time. I believe Einstein was 54th. And John is an epidemiologist. John is from Stanford, originally from Greece. He was right on the money. He was sounding the alarm right at the beginning. So that's who I follow. So with this whole climate change nonsense, and I call it nonsense because it is nonsense. There's so much data out there. I went to a solar presentation in Viking the other evening. Uh-huh. And I put my hand up and I said, we better not be doing what Germany's doing because that's bad. Well, the presenter said, well, I disagree with you. And that's, well, he can disagree all he wants, but the truth is the truth. And this, what I've learned in Alberta here with the climate change movement, the green movement was actually brought here by Mr. Harper, actually started under Brian Mulroney in the Earth Summit at Rio de Janeiro in 1993. He signed us on, and then Harper. In Alberta here, closer to home, you know, Danielle Smith was named the president of the Alberta Enterprise Group in 2021. Well, the Alberta Enterprise Group was founded by seven deep pocket Albertans, one of them being Murray Edwards, also the chair and founder of Canadian Natural Resources, one of a big oil sands producer, and they bought up a lot of properties, lots of different assets, shallow gas, and then deeper wells for multiple production wells. Well, this is horrifying when you do this research on Mr. Edwards, and he partnered with when Daniel became the president of the Alberta Enterprise Group, that's when she started promoting net zero carbon capture, carbon pricing, hydrogen. And one morning, again, I was, having a call, or I woke up. First thing I woke up in the morning was at my sister's cabin. And immediately a question came to my mind. Who holds the patent on carbon capture? Well, grab a coffee, open up my iPad, and then a half hour later, I find out that it's Carbon Engineering Limited out of Calgary, Alberta, holds the patent. Murray Edwards and Bill Gates, the Bill Gates, threw in millions of dollars to start up that organization. The person that was heading that organization was David Keith. David Keith is a longtime IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change. Mr. Keith, one of his babies is geosolar engineering. And that's another reason why Mike Hume bounced away from that organization, because it was horrifying to him that they're going to try to manipulate weather and temperature. And David Keith has written many reports for the IPCC. So that's who holds the patent on carbon capture. Now, carbon capture, another nonsense technology that these billionaires are using to also make billions of dollars, because 70% of these carbon capture projects are funded by us, the taxpayer. And last year, the UCP were working with Justin Trudeau on bringing forward billions, 30 some billion dollars worth of carbon, worth of tax credits. And that's just a money giveaway. When you say a tax credit, that's just a way for them to give money to these individuals. So Mr. Edwards, and then if you follow the boards, follow the chain, you'll see these organizations getting these contracts and the money's going to them. But at the end of the day, it's foolish. It is foolish to start doing this, because what's going to happen? The UCP tripled the industrial carbon tax. They're going to triple it. December 2022, they quietly made the announcement. We are paying heavy emitters taxes here that hits all industries across Alberta. We're paying that. Plus, we're paying a consumer carbon tax. We're getting it on both ends. And it's raising the cost of goods. It's raising the cost of energy. And why are we doing that? Why are we hurting people? And I said this. I said it in Medicine Hat when I ran against Daniel Smith down there in the last debate, right? Hundreds of people there. And I made a comment that, let's have a conversation about climate change. And that's what I want to do. We never had that conversation in Alberta. We deserve that. Rather than talking about how dirty our coal is, no. Let's go have a conversation about whether or not we needed to do this. The answer is no, we did not. And now it's hurting people. So I think we better, what can we do? Go to these solar town halls, go to these wind town halls and make noise. Tell them, stop this. You're hurting us. It's enough already. I went down to Brooks, Medicine Hat area, Pincher Creek, and it's shocking to see these colossal wind turbines everywhere. And to know that the research behind them, they're foolish endeavors. They don't work. They don't work. They're intermittent. And, you know, not only are you driving up the cost of people's heating and electricity prices, but you're making intermittent power. It's nonsense.
Right. And so what about the what is so bad about solar panels? Because lots of people maybe don't really know anything to do with that. Like some solar, there's lots of people who put solar on their houses. They put solar on their, you know, top of their garages. They use it at camping, you know, so they're trying to be good stewards of the sun's rays. And, you know, use that, capture that. But what is the downside, Bob? Because maybe lots of people don't know.
So we have a solar panel on our RV, right? We use it to top up the batteries when we're not there. They can supplement little things, could keep some LED lights going and whatnot. Sure. That's fine. And people want to put them up on their own, pay for themselves. Perfect. Just stay out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. If you want solar panels, you go pay for it. The downside, number one, energy production. There's a documentary that everyone I suggest should watch. Mm-hmm. Switch, the complete film by Scott Tinker. Brilliant documentary, brilliant man. He traveled the entire world researching different components of our energy basket. And it's just an honest look at what the different electricity, you know, production can do and what our current energy basket looks like in the future. Well, with solar, you can cover the whole earth with solar panels and it's not going to do it. It's not going to work. And then you start talking about, well, how are solar panels made? It takes a lot of energy and you're using a lot of materials. Your lithium is it. And they've got people mining this stuff with their hands. It's toxic. It's not safe that way. And, you know, the solar presentation went to the other night. The presenter admitted that these certain panels are very toxic and it's the cheap ones. And then, you know, if they use the most expensive ones, sure, they're more safer. But at the end of the day, they're ecologically, just like wind turbines. It's going to be a disaster in the future. These fields. I had an honest conversation with Camrose at another solar presentation I went to. I enjoy going to these places and having conversations. I do. And with that conversation, it was an honest one. And I said to him, why are we filling up land, like agricultural land, with solar panels? Why don't you just go, you know, put them in the cities on buildings and whatnot? Well, it's more expensive. So, you're still missing my point. Why is Germany burning 20% of their agricultural land? They're growing canola and to burn the seed, to burn the food, to make electricity. A friend of mine in Northern Alberta, he was very happy last year when we reconnected after COVID that they're going to start growing canola, taking it off green, turning it into jet fuel. And I went, you know what? I'm going to play Minister of Agriculture right now. No. You grow food. Let the energy producers produce energy. Let's dig up that coal. Let's dig up this oil. Let's produce this gas. You guys grow food and leave this other stuff to the energy producers. So,
Yeah, it's quite a sad state of affairs.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we talked a little bit about energy. Let's talk also about lots of the other things that are top of mind for people, I think worldwide, but definitely Alberta. I'm a mom of kids in their 20s that are married. You know, I've got 6 grandchildren, you know, so it's like nobody can get into a house anymore. It's like the dream is shot for a lot of people. At least that's how it feels. My son couldn't go to trade school for 2 years because of the Jabberwocky requirement. My daughter can't be a midwife because so there's all these requirements that are being pushed through the education system. My grandchildren quote unquote had to mask 2 years ago And, you know, there's a this funny, not so funny meme going around that said, do you remember 2 years ago when everyone was going to drop dead if they stood 6 feet, you know, any closer than 6 feet from each other? Where are all those dead bodies now? And I'm saying that a bit tongue in cheek, because I think there has to be a lot of forgiveness along the pathway of this recovery from the COVID shenanigan fest, as I like to call it. But it's created this big hiccup in our day-to-day life that was trending that way anyway, but it just like threw more fuel on the fire. So a lot of people are scrambling to try to right the ship, and that's a tough thing. So you're seeing more mental health issues, lots of physical health issues, lots of people who are, have gone, I'm not going to put my mom or dad into a long-term or extended care facility because that didn't turn out so well over the last couple of years. So there's a return to humanity for lots of people too, which is nice, but you know, on the boots on the ground, how do we go forward and sort of can any of these systems be fixed? Because there's lots of things that within the systems are really corrupt. You know, so the justice system isn't a justice system. The schools are not educating, they're not educating along any of our Judeo-Christian sort of moral value guidelines at all. So lots of that has been swept away. So how do what are the things that you see? I mean, land use bylaws, there's so many directions that we can talk about that are important to Albertans because we're so diverse. And awesome. We have an awesome province. We have lots of capability province. Yes. So,
Well, there's so many challenging issues out there. Hmm. But here's a point that I'll make boldly again, and no apology to my friends who are in management positions either that have made these decisions and knew what they were doing was wrong. I've saw friends lie. I've saw many people hurt. I've saw children muzzled. I've saw our children abused through this. I've saw many, many people abused. So anyone, I'm not suggesting that these people need to go to jail. And I'll say it this way, my friends that are managers, anyone that's listening, that you're a friend of mine, you're a manager, you need to be fired. You're not fit to be in those roles. And this is what I hear all the time, Leah. The brown nosers, and it's something I saw, even in the oil and gas industry, the brown nosers rose to the top. Mm-hmm. Cronyism, that's what cronyism is. And the people that aren't suited to be managing and caring for other people, mm-hmm. should not be in those positions. If you are that cold that you're more worried about your paycheck than the health and well-being of your family, friends, and neighbors, you're fired. As Dr. Mackus says, let's start with 1,000. Can you imagine? Let's start with 1,000 AHS managers. Let's start there. So first, I would, if I had premier for a day, fire them all. Fire them. And that's a problem. The justice system, you said, it is not a justice system. It is so unjust. I call it a meat grinder. It is so uncaring. I spent some time in the courts watching these proceedings, and I'm not a lawyer. I wasn't a doctor. I'm not a psychologist, but I got a lot of common sense. And what I see going on in the courts is appalling. It is evil, and I'll call it evil. It is vicious, a vicious, vicious government agency. And there's crown prosecutors that should not be crown prosecutors. There are judges who should not be judges. The law, the lawyers are so lost right now. I have friends that are constitutional lawyers, and I challenge them too. Why aren't you advocating for example, Chris Carbert, Chris Lysak, Jerry Morin, and Tony Olenek? Why aren't you talking about them? Oh, I know. You got to make your $600 or $700 an hour. Is that why? You got to have your sports cars? I'm getting angry right now because everyone should be angry about this. It's disgusting what they're doing to human beings. Mm-hmm. James Sowery, he was charged he was convicted with assault with a deadly weapon for driving over a pylon. And, you know, it was a jury that convicted him. But guess what? The jury wasn't allowed to be in the court to see the back and forth between the defense and the crown prosecutor or the judge and the three, right? They weren't allowed to see that. And my first question was, who are those people? Are these people that were just indoctrinated by CBC over the past 3 years? Yeah, probably. So you know what? If James wants to get his transcripts, he's got to pay $9,300 to see those. We are living in an uncaring society right now. I have friends that are managers in AHS. I have friends that are within the legal system, the police services. And I challenge all of you, stand up and take a stand and protect your friends and neighbors. Stop hurting them. Sorry, Leah, but it's absolutely disgusting what's going on.
Yeah, no, don't be sorry. Don't be apologetic, because that's how I talk on this show all the time. I'm just like, why are you not actually like waking up to what's going on here? This, you know, we had the pleasure of listening to Dr. Mackus and another doc last night. And I have to say, though, I had a little bit of a disagreement in my mind around how we run healthcare. So I'm going to share with you what I think. Sure. Is that a lot of people around healthcare has become this thing where you as a human being go to somebody to diagnose your problem. If you were kind of a sentient human being at all and sort of felt anything, you would probably know that things are going wrong in your body long before you need a diagnosis of anything. So preventative medicine is never talked about at all, like the things that you can do every day to prevent stuff. And so this, it's like, what's the next pill that you can take to fix the next thing, whether it's pharmacy or illegal drugs that have now been legalized, you know, so we've got this compounding thing of everybody zoning out all the time too.
Right.
We can't even make good decisions. So here we are in this milieu where we've got lots of people who have got cognitive malfunction. They've got physical health problems going on. And when you've got a health crisis in your own body or in your family, your ability to think about these bigger complex issues is diminished very, very quickly. So when we see so many people struggling with health things and surprise health things now, the number one cause of death in Alberta right now is unknown. So you've got these unknown things, which people don't do very well with. We like the things that we know. We don't like surprises. Our psychology doesn't like surprises. We say we like them, but we don't like them. We go, yeah. Oh, that was a surprise I didn't want. It was not a surprise, a delight. It was a holy, what the hell was that surprise? So we've got this time right now where there's all these things that are really not stable. And so the whole looking to the politicians or the political parties, how's that going to help us to get stability or not? And then what do you offer that would be different maybe from what we're seeing in here, you know, what we've been experiencing for the last several decades, because that's the answer to everything is more drugs, more just stuff that takes you out of your own ability to manage your life.
Well, politically, it's, you know, I guess I didn't finish sharing my journey there, but I left the UCP and then I was recruited by the Wildros. And wasn't even 2 months, month and a half, I was out of there. I saw the same thing, this top down, like I'm the leader and I want to be the leader. And, you know, I saw a group of whatever it was, a small group, 12 of people, regular Albertans making decisions for thousands of their members. I was like, no, I'm out of here. And then I was the co-founder and the former president and benefactor of the Alberta Prosperity Project. That was an amazing initiative. When I walked away from that, I think it was April 4th of 2022. I went over to the Independence Party of Alberta. And at the time when I walked away from the Alberta Prosperity Project, it was amazing. Like it was just a place to come to and it was nonpartisan. I was having outreach from all walks of life and, you know, left and right spectrum politically. It was great. And unfortunately, it was turned into a political machine by Dr. Dennis Muldry, former doctor, who's now at the table of Daniel Smith in the UCP. And it's interesting. I know some people were upset that Arthur released the audio in the video there. It wasn't him that released that. Mm. And Dennis Muldry would call Arthur before that to set up meetings with Daniel Smith. And Arthur was bribed couple times by that. Anyways, so when I walked away, it was a brilliant organization. We had 1,200 people come out in Medicine Hat. And the main pillar of that educational society was a referendum on independence to inspire Albertans to understand that we need leverage as people. And then from there, I went to the Independence Party, and I spent a whole year full time. Again, I've never taken a penny. Dana and I are doing what we've done. We travel around out of our own pocket, and we're blessed to be able to do so. And then 4 days before the AGM, 4 days before a leadership review, mm-hmm. 2 months before a general election, the most important election in our history, period, mm-hmm. where we did polling and we had a legitimate shot at five seats. People need to understand how important of a point that is. Right now, the UCP are neck and neck. And I could care less who wins, UCP, NDP. They're pulling us down the same direction, both of them. So it happened in BC in 2017, where the Green Party had held the balance of power, two seats. Mm-hmm. Two seats. So if you're in a minority government in, say, in Alberta here, the UCP, for example, they're a minority government. And we had three, whether now they're independent seats or whether they were Independence Party seats. That is the power. They need those votes to put things through. So we were in a place with that organization where we were there. And nine members, I'm not even going to call them board members, nine Albertans made the decision for thousands. And they removed Archer as leader. And they thought that I was going to stay. I walked away on my own accord. I was not going to put up with that nonsense. And so now, after that night, we were in cameras here, and Dr. Hoff was here, Dr. Mackis, and first I spoke, and then Marie Rittenhouse spoke, and she has the intention of running as an independent candidate in Wetaskiwin, Muscatchees. And as Marie was just finishing, I got the text. And some people, you know, we were blindsided, mm-hmm. but there was no anger. There wasn't. It was just, okay, I guess I'm going to do a pivot now. And it was a liberating moment, honestly. There was sadness. There was confusion to know that some of my friends did what they did, to know some of my friends were not who I thought they were. Mm-hmm. They were very good at hiding stuff. Right. And then I walked away from that, Leah, and I went, okay, I think I'm done with party politics. Mm-hmm. I think independent candidates are going to be very powerful. If we had independent MLAs, independent voices of communities across Alberta that are beholden to their constituents. One of my first, when I'm successful in getting in that legislature, a private member's bill I will put forward will be that referenda is brought back. And I would do that on my own accord. And I'll sign any contract bound me by law that I am bound by the will of the people in this constituency. But can you imagine referenda? We deserve it. It's been a long time coming, and the technology's there. There's no excuse. It doesn't cost millions of dollars to do referendums when you do it locally like that. And then we get into that legislature as a block of independent MLAs that are truly the voice of the people. Then we could tackle the crisis of public health care, where natural medicines are being blocked, where this pushing of pills is hurting people, where they're cutting people open where they don't have to, where you need to, we should promote health. I take my personal responsibility for my own health. I know I got to go to the gym. I know when I'm not, you know, that's on us. A pill's not going to solve anything. We got to look after ourselves. And I think as community leaders, we have to send that message out.
Yes, loud and clear. So, Bob, how can people find out more about what you're doing? I think we're going to have to do a part two because we're out of time for today. How can people find out about what you're doing? Can you give your website address?
Yeah, it's, I got to remember it. I'm on Facebook, and they can reach out to me by email too. My personal email is the same I've had for decades, Bob Blayone, so BLAYONE @gmail.com.
Beautiful. Yes. So if you want to support Bob's work, if you want to find out what he's doing, if you want to show up at the meetings that he's showing up at and find out his speaking schedule or any of the doctors that he's been traveling with, you can get a hold of Bob through his email. And Bob, thank you so much for talking about sort of the history of what's going on in Alberta, the snapshot of it, because I think that is really a good start for people to just digest how corrupt things really are. And it's not just you think there's something wrong, it really is something wrong. So thank you for exposing that and speaking from your heart about, you know, what can be the possibility if we have independent candidates that are accountable to their constituents. So thank you so much for that. Everybody, love yourselves, mind your minds, love each other. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.